Okay, today is April 19th. We're learning polemics in the Bible. And we have to ask ourselves a question when analyzing Rishonim and attempting to determine whether they're saying something polemical in nature. Is there any such thing as absolutely pure parshanut? Who comes the closest to a pure parshanut? What do I mean by that? Is that they're not coming to the text with an agenda, right? Their only purpose is parshanut. Now, what is parshanut? What is this pasuk saying? I have no grammar. I should put things into proper context. Right? I have to know the language as well as the logical nature of the words before me. If you recall at the very beginning of this semester, here's a very quick example on the board. I actually determined that the coincidence, the historical coincidence between the time when Jewish commentaries started to be interested in Pshat, Pshuto Shel Mikra, Rashi didn't invent it, Rashi was part of it, of course, the major Parshan to exemplify it. Of course, since he was the first, he didn't go the full distance as Rashbam or even Ezra might have wanted him to, right? So, the time when Jews started to write Pshat and the time when there was a proliferation of disputations and defenses of the Tanakh, that there are some scholars who maintain that that's not a coincidence. That what drove Jews to start to recognize the Pshat of Mikra, what drove them to this realization was when they started to have to defend the Tanakh and explain why this pasuk is not talking about a virgin birth. This pasuk is not talking about the Son of God. Right? So what goes into telling someone that these words, Hine Ha'alma Hara Violet Ben, that this pasuk is not talking about a virgin birth of Jesus who would save them from an enemy. Okay? There could be more, but I gave three explanations in just these few words, in these five words that go a long way into answer my question, is there any such thing as pure parshanut? Right. What happens right after in Shmos, where it says that Bnei Yisrael Bayatzmu Bayirbu Bimod Baod Batimalei Haaretz Osam? What comes right after that? The whole land was filled with the Jewish people. What's the next opinion in Shmos? No. Yaakov said that you should stay in Goshen. And here it says, "Vatzimale Horitz of Son." What's the next pasuk? Heinam Bnei Yisrael, Rav Vatzumi Menu, Havad Yitzchak Malo, right? So, there's hardly a 19th century great Rishon who doesn't make a diatribe against assimilation from those three words. Vatzimale Horitz of Son. It's a Maimon Chazal. Where were the Jews found? Even in the theaters and the circuses, which were places of Avodah Zarah and Gilui Arayos, which was done back in Egyptian times. Certainly in Roman times. The question is about Simalei Haaretz Osam. If you use that as a starting point to rail against assimilation, Are you really a social scientist who's using the pasuk to prove your points, or are you a parshan?
Isn't it even a better question on Chazal? What makes him Chazal in temper?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I think their intention was very similar to what the rabbi does in the Rosh Hashanah.
You don't think like it's like a Mesorah that they have necessarily?
So today you have a practically every Rishon of note, the Rambam, the Rabban, the Sefer Eshkol, Shmuel Ha'Hakdama, the Shas, Shmuel Nugget, where they say in any Agadita, Yeshu Kabbalah, Yeshu Shalom Kabbalah, you know, it's your mind yourself, whether you want to take it as something literally or something. Take it all literally, it's practically foolish. But if you deny the validity of even one of the midrashim, then it's rishus, because the midrashim is saying something deep. It's just that it may not be the phrase that we're taking these things literally. Right? So, there's a deeper meaning to everything. The drash of the drash may be the pshat of the pasuk. You get it? The deeper meaning of the medrash may be what the pasuk is actually saying. So what did we say about these five words? Perish hamilos. You're wrong. This word does not mean virgin. That's psula. Right? Hara means is pregnant. Not will be pregnant 600 years from now. What else? What's the purpose of this child? The whole point of this vision is that the king he's talking to, Ahaz, should not join a coalition with the king of Aram and the northern tribes against Assyria. That's a wrong-headed thing to do. Hold out, God will save you. You do not need to join coalitions to save yourself from the battle of the Assyrians. Okay? How on earth would a virgin birth, arguably, some 600 years from now, make Ahaz have faith now? Furthermore, where is this point? Was he made or something? That is present. It means it's the whole, right? You get it? That this should be a harbinger for a virgin birth, and of course, Jews have to be very careful in saying these things because you can get killed. There's one interpretation where the Jew making this argument was killed when he insisted that this can't be Jesus because he didn't save them; they killed him. How could this even be Jesus? Even if you want to say it's the Assyrians. The purpose of this pasuk is to have faith that you will outlast the Assyrians. How does the prophecy regarding someone who lived at the time of the Romans? And by the way, he didn't even save us from the Romans. This guy is supposed to save us from the enemy. His king's son, Hizkiyahu, did save us from the Assyrians. And here we are, because he did. Right? But what is your saying then? Pshat! You get it? Philology, context, syntax, grammar. It's all coming out of these arguments. Okay, see it? Okay, so is there any such thing as a pure parshanut? Everyone's colored. Everyone is. They have their pen is filled with their own personal experiences, and you know, everyone is colored by those experiences. So don't be surprised if someone like a Rabanel, who found himself in the employ of the King of Portugal and then the King of Spain, that he should instill some political theories into his perushim, especially of Sefer Shoftim and Sefer Shmuel. Don't be surprised by that.
So also don't be surprised that when Jews are living in the 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th centuries in Europe, that when they come across, let's say, prophecies regarding Edom, the fall of Edom, right? Or how about now? If you read a prophecy in Yirmiyahu about the fall of Ba'arav, or Yeshayahu about the fall of the Aravim, right? Right? Wouldn't you suspect that someone would incorporate some element or degree of contemporary thought into his parish? Yirmiyahu Nun Aleph speaks of the fall of Tophet. You know, I remember the first Iraq was called Desert Storm, the first Iraqi war in 1991. Everyone was looking for parallels between what's happening today and then Yirmiyahu 1951. Christians love when they do this. Okay, so let's take a look at what we did last time with Rashbam. Let's take a look at the source, Rashbam, Shmos 32:19. That's where we left off last time. So Moshe beholds the people making an egel. He has already been informed that they are making an egel, right? He is aware of it. But when he lays eyes on it, when he actually beholds it, he sees it, he loses control and he crashes the thing, smashes them in front of people. Right? You ready? Look at Rashbam writes on this. It says, "Kishera'a et ha'egel, tashash kocho, v'lo ha'yabo koach l'hashlichem." When he saw the egel, he laid eyes on the egel, his strength waned, and he had no koach to actually cast them, rachok minem tzatz, shalo yazik yisragel. Now, can you just give me with your hands what's the motion of Moshe's Vayashlichem? Well, have you ever seen paintings of Moshe where he's holding a little? So according to Rashbam, he just dropped them and he pushed them away so they wouldn't fall on his feet, right? As opposed to, all the pictures that he grabbed them like this. Right? All right, I'll admit there's some midrashim that he only wanted to throw down one of them. Did you hear this, members? He didn't want to throw down both of them, he wanted to just throw down one of them. Did you hear this? Right? Because in the Masorah, when he tosses them down, it says, V'yashlichem, look how it's spelled, V'yadav. V'yadav. If you're not prepared to blame it, you might be tempted to read V'yadav. Because the Masorah omitted the yud there, which makes it plural. Right? Without the yud, it can be read miyodov, and it should be. Bakara reads miyodov, we should be correct. But in the unvocalized Torah that he's reading from, it looks like miyodov. Right? So along comes the Bala in the Torah, and they make a drush out of it. They say, no, this is not deserved to be corrected. Not a free sin because it's read me a dog whether the yud is there or not, right? Is that you? Oh, wait a second. Be right back.
Danny, stop.
I'll admit, it's not great. That's why we didn't finish it. One piece?
After that, self.
You want some? No, it's good. It's also, it has good texture. Sometimes a pie just falls apart on you. I like a nice firm pie. All right. I'm leaving this here, so take a minute. Okay, so. So Rashbam says that just that's what Yashu is saying. Right? Now, if I want to convince you that someone in his paper should say something against Christianity, obviously I have to do a few things. A, I have to connect it to some kind of Christian theology. Right? B, what's more important, I have to show you that this is not something he's likely to have said on his own anyway. Right? When Rashi says Vayera by Boker Yom Echad, is there a good reason for him to say a day of the one God? Yeah, because it says in Bereshit Rabbah. Yep. The issue at hand here is that there were so many better answers for Rashi to give for why it says Yom HaFod and not Yom HaShom. That when he writes Yom HaFod, a red flag comes up in front of me and says, you know, Rashi's trying to say something against Christians or possibly against dualists or Zoroastrians, especially with the Kli Yochar's beautiful interpretation we gave last class about Erev and Boker coming from the same place. The forces of good, the forces of evil, the forces of confusion, the forces of clarity. Okay? So what's the Christian theology? I don't know if I mentioned it last class. Is that one of the biggest trespasses that classical Christianity has made away from Judaism? A Christian comes to my office and says, I want to become Jewish. So I'll say, what do you need to become Jewish for? We're a hated people. We believe you have salvation even outside of Judaism. Have you heard that? Chassidi umos ha'olam yeshnu chelek ulam haba. If you go to a Christian and you say, I'd like to profess belief in Yeshu, so they'll say, oh, it's a good thing you're doing this, because if you didn't do this, you're in big trouble at the end. Did you read Dante's Inferno? Okay. Why an altruistic God would put his son in only in the middle of human history so that everyone before him is burning in Gehenna, right? You get that point? Who did those poor people before him have to believe in order to atone for the sin of their parents in conceiving them? I'll let the Christian theologians deal with that one. They'll say the father is the father is very vengeful. Jesus came in and brought love to a vengeful God. Why that doesn't sound dualistic, I don't know. Yeah? How much of a bizarre. Okay, so here it is. So So good. The Christians have some serious trespasses. They gave God bodily form. There's a Trinity. So some said that that's mamash of Avodah Zarah. Some said it's just a heresy within Judaism that the Ramban spoke about it in the disputation. But there's another big, huge trespass is that they believe that there's a New Testament that not just undoes the first, supersedes the first, it pushes the first away. It says you don't need to do the first. What kind of convoluted answer are you going to get from a Christian who says, what gave you the right to turn Saturday to Sunday? What gave you the right to turn Passover to Easter? What gave you the right to eat leaven on Passover? Where are you following the law of the Tanakh, of the Old Testament, which you say that you agree with? And wholesale, you're disobeying all of it. What answer do you think you're getting from the highest of the high, I guess that's the Pope, and the Catholic clergy, over why they are opposed to homosexuality? What will be their answer? What? Leviticus 18. Is that what you just said? Because it says so in Parshas Acharei. Alright, you with me? Okay, fine. I'm with you so far. But what about all those other mitzvahs in Parshas Acharei that you're not listening to? Like neither. Right? Who told you? Where did you get your permission to say that neither doesn't apply? Or that Shabbos doesn't apply? That Kashrus doesn't apply? Where did that come? Will that come in? Listen, the religion evolves, I understand it. Christianity wasn't originally celibate, now it is, by ideal. But wait, what gives you the right for all this? So the verse in Matthew, I come not to change the law of Moses, I come to fulfill it. Jesus somehow fulfilled it. What gives you the right to make graven images, even in light of, even if they feel that the Aseret HaDibros is the only thing that's binding on them? But that's a graven image. That's written in the Aseret HaDibros. So they said, well, once God allowed his son to walk the earth, so that no longer exists. Really? Where does it say that in the Aseret HaDibros? Remember, I hope you're never forced to bring this out. But whenever, if you ever find yourselves arguing, remember that the touchdown rule, right? You want to change the approach of a 1,300-year-old religion? Surely those changes should be very convincing. Right? Of course, when you're indoctrinated, you have 750, 800 verses of the Old Testament that all point towards Jesus, you'll be very indoctrinated on your Christianity. But every time you see each one of them falls by the wayside. Each one of them is based, look above my head, on a wrong philology, a wrong, a mistaken grammar, an outrageous context, and you're going to say, wait a second, we have midrashim that take things out of context. Yes, I admit, we have midrashim that have our Moshe talking to power about Yaakov and Esau. But no one's burnt at the stake for not accepting those things. And no one is, if someone says that you're a kofer, if you don't believe in these midrashim, that person is wrong at it. No religious imperative that we have to take every message literally. It's rather foolish to think so. Okay? So, Christians, we read this aside, if you recall, some weeks ago, that Jeremiah 31 speaks of a new covenant. Lo kabrisa rishona, not like the original covenant that I forged with you, but the new covenant that you'll write and you'll keep, you'll bind upon your hearts, and like this new covenant that you'll keep. Right? Who says it's a new Torah? Where does it say it's a new Torah? Who said that the new covenant is a new Torah? Right? So here's what it is. Christians claim that there is something in the Torah that indicates that something will supersede the books of Moses. Namely, something Moshe itself did. Talk to me. That's the Dibros. Where's the Lutos? plenty of good interpretations amongst our commentaries of why Moshe did it, ranging from Ramban, who said he just lost control, which is a little like Rashbam. Rashbam's Korban. Or I like the Meshech Chachma most, Nachram, who said that Moshe, the Kavana, broke the Luchos in order to show them that nothing you can create with your hands, that you can sense yourselves, can be imbued with inherent holiness. The only thing that is inherently holy is the Kadosh Baruch Hu himself, and you cannot represent him with something. Not with a golden calf, and not even with golden Luchos that he himself made with his own hands. What am I going to do to show you that nothing has inherent holiness? Right? But come on, I'm going to smash these very Luchos in front of you. To show you that Kal Chomer, this angel, is not holy. They weren't worshipping the angel itself. They were directing their supplications to God through the angel. The Tziv says, who was the one doing it? The Erev Rav. What was the statement of the angel? Eile Elohecha Yisrael Asher Halucha Meretz Mitzrayim. They wanted Israel. They wanted to worship Hashem too. But to them, recently minted Egyptian converts to Judaism, to them, how can you worship the God who just took us out of Israel without some kind of physical feature? And the Jews went along with it. Okay. So Moshe sees this, and you have these various interpretations of what he was doing, either without Kavanah or with Kavanah. Comes Rashbam to prefer the without Kavanah position. Why? Because if you're living amongst people who claim that Moshe b'Kavanah smashed the Luchos as a harbinger for a broken covenant some 900 years later, right? How can you rebuff such a position? No. See, a Christian, you can ask a Christian my touchdown rule. If you want to undo a call on the field, a call you agree with, that the Kodesh Baruch Hu scored a touchdown when he gave us the Torah, right? Or at least the Seres Adibros, right? Where have you the right to overturn a call on the field? You with me? Hello? So they'll say, I'll tell you where we have the right. The call was made in the Torah itself when Moshe broke the Luchos. If you're indoctrinated, that's a strong, strong right. Never mind that there are hundreds of psukim in the Tanakh about the Torah being immutable. Zichri Torah's Moshe Avdi is the last word of any Navi in Tanakh. Right? Right? So, how can you respond to that? It's very simple. You say that Moshe broke it without the law. You didn't need to break it. How can you destroy a covenant by mistake? Or by accident? Rashbam seems like a mistake, or Ramban is like an accident. Ramban says Moshe breaking the Luchos was similar to him hitting the Egyptian who was beating the Israelite and hitting the rock right after his sister died. And they were playing for water. When Ban says that Moshe was sometimes act on impulse, could get a hot head sometimes. you can count the breaking of the Luchos in the same category. Right? Okay, I go along. I think Tweedo is correct. This statement here is very clever. A Shabbat in the year, or let's say about 1120 or 1030, has to be very careful. The Crusades are wild with their rabid hatred against us. We don't need more excuses to burn more Jewish cities. Yet,
he has to write commentaries for his readers in order to
turn back the interpretations to which they're exposed. You know what the Jewish Shabbos experience in some of these places in Ashkenaz was a forced sermon every Shabbos from the local bishops. Remember that came that was in the film when he was talking to the queen and he said, we'll go into their houses of worship and we'll, this is what they were exposed to. And you couldn't go to Kiddush Club during that speech. You had to be there at shul. They said, pack the houses, I want to have packed house. Oh, yes. What we take for granted is unbelievable. You didn't know on any particular day, is my kid getting home, from school today? Am I going to have a job when I get home today? I never. Okay. All right. Let's look at some of the Chassidei Ashkenaz, bottom of page 7. In Parshas Bereishis, which is, Vayivarech Elokim es Yom HaShvi'i Vayikadesh Oso. See that? HaShvi'i Vayikadesh Oso. Sotevos Yeshu. Sounds like something okay, I would say. Remez, She'osid La'amod Yeshu La'avir HaShabbos La'asos Yom Eid B'Yom Rishon. Kach Nomar Vayivarech Elokim es Yom HaShvi'i Klomar Tizharu Shelo Tizku Acharei Yeshu Lo Tazdu Shabbos B'Yom Rishon. Wow. See what he wrote? This is historically inaccurate. Can you explain to me why? Do you have it in front of you there, boy? You've been to a friend. Great. Gracious. One that says on book 3, page 7. He said there is a hint in the sanctification of Shabbos and Bereishis to Yeshu. As a hint that Yeshu is going to change the Shabbos to another day of the week. Right? What's the historical inaccuracy? Is that Jesus certainly died around the year 35, 40 CE. And the change from Saturday to Sunday was made in the year 325. Get that? Followers of Jesus until the Council of Nicaea in 325 were still keeping the Lord's Day on Saturday. Still observing Passover. Okay? Get the picture. Alright, but what he means is that followers of Yeshua, whatever it is, you see three letters in a row, Yud, Yud, Shin, Vav. Do you see a lady with the whole introduction, the change to Habib the Hevel Vorik? You see what the Gematria of this word is? Yes, that's us. Right? Hevel Vorik Mispalim Le'elo Yoshia. So, okay, I mean, praying to a man who died and was buried, I don't see how he's going to save you. If you believe he rose, and then he rose to atone for your sins, or something like that, or... Right, so that's your doctrine. But, this is a debate over whether we should be saved as long. Just by curiosity, do you say it in your own language? All of you do? Did you say it? Did you say it in language? Some people don't say Jerviyah, but Mishnah, they say Shem Yishtachavim Lehevel Berik Yishtachavim Lehevel Yoshia. Apparently not, you don't say it. You say Aleinu? Yes, the Siddur has started to put it in parentheses. Some just put it in the text. The scholarship is that it was originally part of it. The oldest Kisvayat, the oldest Siddur we have in our hands, all have that line. Right? Why was it removed? because Vorik is Gematria Yeshu, and Christians thought that we're referring to them when we say it, right? So there was no shortage of former Jews who remembered Elenu, right? And this is what they did. Let me tell you, this is very, very ironic, is that they forced upon the Jews to sing Elenu out loud with a church song, church tune, that was meant to be universal. And that church tune would be an assurance for the Christians who would listen at the end of the davening that the Jews were not adding that line. You know what the tune is? Na 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 na. Shabbos, they should just say Ushema Echad. Don't say Bayom Ahu twice. Okay? Just say Bayom Ahu once, Ushema Echad once, fine. But these are things that were forced upon us. Huh? These are things that were forced upon us by Christians to make sure that we were not disparaging their Lord in our prayers. Okay? Should we put it back in the prayers? Well, you obviously think so, right? Which one is called to do it?
Yeah,
we did
it last school.
So I've discussed this in scholars and shuls and much of, you know, I don't like to say it. But Shulchan Kippur, I think the Chazan just says it because Shulchan Kippur time, maybe it's something to show your zealousness against the Avodah Zarah. But I don't like saying it because A, historically those Tzukim were never meant to refer to Christians because they all come from Yeshayahu. And I can't believe that Yeshayahu, when disparaging all of the Avodah Zarah, was thinking about Christians who didn't exist yet. He was thinking about hardcore, pure of all the Avodah Zarah. Right? You follow what I'm saying? So in its origins, I don't believe that Christians were in mind, and especially since Chazal maintained that the original author of Elenu is Yahushua. Have you heard that? Yahushua. Same for Yahushua. The original author of Elenu. Okay? So that it's questionable again that Yahushua had in mind Christians, we should say. So, with that in mind, have any of you ever completed the Sefer Avodah Zarah? If you think Christians are over the Avodah Zarah, you'd better polish up on your Sefer Avodah Zarah, right? Because you can't hire a Christian to do your taxes. You can't hire a Christian to have any association with you. You know what I'm saying? A hardcore Obey the Avodah Zarah? You can't have anything to do with them around the time of their holidays. Really? That's how we can behave here in New York? Maybe you want to live someplace else where you have no interaction with Christians. You can behave that way. But there's a good reason why the Bali Atosfas throughout Shas, first place is in Bechoros, Dafayin in the sense of Bob Metzia, a few places in the Mesechus of Avodah Zarah, that Paskin unequivocally, that Christians are a heresy within Judaism, they are not Ovdei Avodah Zarah. They are Mishtatef Shem Shamayim Im Dabar Acher. You hear that, Lashon? You get it? They're Mishtatef Shem Shamayim Im Dabar Acher. They're praying to their Yeshu
They believe that they are praying to the Borei Olam, who took us out of Egypt, who delivered the Torah to us publicly, and split the Red Sea, and spoke to Yeshayahu, Yirmiyahu, Tanya, Chagai, Zechariah, Malach.
Right?
Where's that Lashon Torah? Where's that Lashon Torah? Mishtatev, is a sheet of real hardcore of the Zohar now. So I'll admit that there are some portions say this. I remember once gave a shiur, and I gave a shiur with 10 proofs that Christianity is not about the Zohar, and then 10 proofs that it is about the Zohar. It's a big tshuva of the Minhas Yisrael. Munkat Shurva. It's a big tshuva. It's giving all kinds of proofs all over the place. I added a few of my own. Okay, so the Christians got wind that he put, you know, some words in Aleinu, but those words were from Sefer Yeshayahu. There's no way that they were originally written for the Christians in mind. Right? See, I don't mind if the Pope thinks I'm worshipping the wrong religion. I think he's worshipping the wrong religion. But there's a difference between saying that and saying that you are a gutter religion, which is called the Zohar. It's the Lashon. Remember, that's what's his name? Leonard Jeffries said about Jews. Or maybe it was Louis Farrakhan. Because once you say someone is a gutter religion, that's not a far distance from persecution. Okay. So the snake was Arum. You know what we can do? Let's collect all the words in the Torah that have Gematria 316. The snake was Arum, we called. So what is it? The Gematria Yeshu. Ki Nochash V'Yeshu La'abed Et Ha'olam Nitkavnu Zeb Guf Zeb Nisham. Wow. You know what? How did he get away with this? By the way, if you wanted to really be clever, you know what he should say? Nochash is the Gematria. What word is Gematria Nochash that's related to Yeshu? Mashiach. Nochash was Arum. Mashiach, Yeshu thinks he's Mashiach. Oh my goodness. Let's move on. Uben Shmona Yomim, Rosh Tevos Yeshu. Remez ki hayo asid. Do you have a computer format in order to get all the places in the Torah with three words in the row spell Yud Shin Vav? I know someone in my shul has this. All the places in the Torah with three letters, three words in a row, but it has to be Rosh Tevos or Sof Tevos. These are all Sof Tevos. No, this one is Rosh Tevos. It's Rosh Tevos backwards. You see it? Ben Shmonas Yomim is Yeshu backwards. Remez ki ayo asid la sos mila ulhaviro so v'sof nirmaz mi kol ben nechor shenisnaku ma'asov laviv shva shamayim ha'shalom mizarachavu kolomar shalo oysa ho raso shal Yeshu mizera kosher ki v'znus of artoim ibartoim. Sure, if you know, Chazal have a name for Jesus' father, you know that? Have you heard of it? Ben Stara. We did at the beginning of the semester. Mm-hmm. Ben Stara, because he was a soldier who impregnated Jesus' mother. Right? So, the Bris is a very, very powerful one, because that's one of the things the Christians had to let go of right away. That was the dispute between Jesus and James, or I should say between Paul and James. Right? You get it? Paul wanted to get rid of Bris. James said, what are you talking about? We're observant Jews. How do you do this? But you understand why circumcision has to be one of the first things to go, right? Because
people might have been inclined to say, yeah, let's look into this new thing that these people, and let's see, what do we have to do? Circumcision? Goodbye! Right? Especially if you're a grown man. They didn't have the anesthesia we have today. Right? No one's going to buy into that. I'm sorry, the 80-year-old kids don't have a chance to say yes or no. But no, adults are not going to buy into this system. Okay, got it? I told you about that Ukrainian guy whose mother didn't want him to have a circumcision because she remembered when she was a little girl in Yugoslavia in the early 40s that the Nazis, when they came, they took men in the streets and dropped their pants publicly. About scores of them. And they saw if they're circumcised, they take them away. Right? So he said, I don't want you to have a circumcision if one day someone might do that to you. So he said, Mom, I walk around with a beard and payas and my tzitzis out with a yarmulke. They're going to know I'm Jewish long before they get to my circumcision. Okay? So look what he writes in Parshas Tazria. Wow, he makes a whole big drusha about that Jesus being a leper. Because what is a garment after all, if not Shesi Ve'erev, right? A bunch of crisscrosses, right, on the loom. I'll tell you this, at the end of Sanhedrin says that Mashiach is a leper. Mashiach is a sufferer. A b'yiras Hashem. A sufferer like a rechayim is attached to his neck. Remember the difference between Mashiach and we did inside, didn't we? That Mashiach removes his bandages one by one in case he's called. He doesn't have to a lot of bandages to put back on. But all the other lepers take off all their bandages and wash themselves and then put them up back on. Okay, he talks about Jesus making tattoos and the like. I think they applied to Jesus what they saw his followers, his Christians, doing at their time. Okay, he got away with it. It came down to us. Okay, after the break, we have just two classes, guys.